Well, hello, and welcome to this edition of Money Search with Lenny Lawson, the car guru. That's exactly what I'm doing this morning. I'm looking for some free money from the government. Yeah, they're really pushing these electric vehicles, so I started doing a little research. I Googled government subsidies for electric vehicle chargers, and oh, so many different things popped up. Let's see what this one is. It's called the Vehicle Emissions Reduction and Electric Vehicle Charging Station Project. Boy, that's a mouthful. The Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation provides funding for the repower or replacement of Class 4 through 8 school shuttle and transit buses. What's that have to do with electric vehicles? Well, we'll see. They also will support grants for alternative fuel or all-electric models. Okay, so now we're getting to the meat of it. Alternative fuels include but are not limited to compressed natural gas, propane, and hybrid electric technologies. Funding is available for light-duty EV charging stations. Bingo! That's what I need, because I have to put in some charging stations here at Gateway. My manufacturers, well, primarily Ford, they're making me put in I volunteered for it. I explained all that in an earlier episode. If you want to find out, go to the podcast. But anyway, public companies, it's available to the public. It's available to nonprofit organizations. It's also included to private companies, which is exactly what Gateway Ford is. It's a private company. Now, where's this money coming from? You'll be surprised. It's coming from Volkswagen. Yes, Volkswagen had a little problem. They were lying about the emissions on their diesel engines. Do you remember that? And it's called the Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Trust. They set up a trust, loaded it full of money, and the money came from all of the fines and the settlement that the federal government did with Volkswagen. And then they spread the money out among the different states. So every state has a little piece of Volkswagen money to be able to, upgrade buses and different types of shuttle vehicles and freight trucks, it says here. A lot of other things are included, but also they're willing to provide some money for EV charging stations. Now, I don't know how much. I mean, it was estimated originally that these things were going to cost me about $250,000 to put in. I have found out since then that that's a bit of overreach. It's actually going to cost around $150,000. Still a lot of money, but we'll set that up and it'll be just like a gas pump. People will come up and scan their credit card and they'll be able to load up with electrons. So aren't you excited? I'm not, but it also looks like TVA is getting into the game. You know, that's where all of our power comes from in the state of Tennessee, unless you have solar panels on top of your roof or you're maybe digging deep into the earth where you can use some of that geothermal stuff. So it looks like TVA is offering discounts for folks who install EV chargers. So you won't have to pay as high a rate, I guess. That's one of the reasons I'm putting the EV chargers on a different meter, because I don't want it to negatively impact the rates that I have to pay for my car dealerships, which are pretty high. And so we pay, our annual rate is based on our peak rate. And so if we have a really big spike, then we have to pay a dividend to the power company. They don't call it that. They call it a surcharge, a usage surcharge. But I don't want that to affect my dealership rates. So we're going to put it on a separate meter. And I have talked to the engineers and stuff. I've got this guy that I had to hire. He's an electrical engineer, and he designs. Well, he designed all the electrical systems in my Ford dealership in 2007, and then he did it again when we added on the Nissan showroom. And it was pretty complicated stuff. You got to have the right people looking at that stuff. You know, too often people try to do things like that themselves and just wing it. But when you've got all these inspectors and all these requirements, then you can't afford to wing it because they'll make you tear it all out and start over again. So I'm looking for free money. I think there's got to be more out there. I mean, these are, that's a Tennessee project. That one's a TVA project. I mean, didn't they just pass some type of big infrastructure bill with the federal government that's supposed to provide a bunch of money for chargers? That's what President Biden said. So I'll probably have to do some more digging. So in the meantime, I'm going to take a short break and I will be back in just 1 minute. All right, I'm back. About 10:30 yesterday, I got a phone call from a gentleman that I use a lot. He goes and picks up vehicles that I buy. He's an expert in driving a big truck with a big trailer and loading vehicles, old vehicles specifically, and tying them down so that they don't move around and bringing them back to Greenville, Tennessee. Because lately I've been kind of on a buying spree. But the phone call that I got, he had arrived in Atlanta. So I bought, I don't know, I mentioned this a few shows ago. I bought some vehicles down at the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance Gooding Auction. And I bought a 55 Thunderbird, and I bought a Piaggio Vespa 125, 1954 model. Well, Johnny, he's my guy. He's my mechanic that works on all my projects. He is a problem solver usually. This one baffled him. He could not get that little simple engine to start. The probably the second kick that he did on the Kickstarter, it rumbled for a few seconds, but nothing since then. I mean, he's rebuilt the carburetor. He has done a compression test. We've tried different fuels. We've changed the gap on the spark plug, and nothing works. So I did some research. I got online and was looking for anybody that actually works on or sells old Vespa scooters. Now, this is a 1954 model. That's slightly older than me. And so, no luck. So I called my buddy who happens to be a motorcycle restorer extraordinaire. He said, I can't work on it for you, Lenny, but I know somebody who can. So he hooked me up with this guy in Atlanta, and he said, bring it on down. We'll check it out for you. We can probably get it started in just a few minutes. Really? It's that simple? Yeah, usually it's pretty simple. So my guy left yesterday. And it left real early in the morning, called me at 10:30. He said, apparently, Lenny, it's not as simple as what we thought it was going to be. They're going to have to rebuild your motor. Well, why are they going to do that? It was restored and everything. Yeah, it was restored about 5 years ago, and it's been sitting ever since with ethanol in it. Not pure ethanol, but, you know, gas with ethanol in it. You know what ethanol is, right? That's that gasoline that's made from corn. And that's about what 10% of that is in most of the fuel that we buy. You can buy straight gas if you go to a Marathon station. I don't know anybody else that sells it. But anyway, that stuff is very bad for an engine for a carburetor, for a fuel system, if it sits there. If you don't drive your car very much, like you drive it once a month or something, don't buy that kind of gas. Go to Marathon and get 90-octane straight gas. Because that's what you put in cars that are going to be sitting, and that's definitely what you put in your lawnmowers. Lawnmowers and chainsaws and two-cycle engines like that, they do not like ethanol. And that's why your mower won't start. You know, when you park it, you did your last mow in, I don't know, November, and you park it all winter, and it started, everything was fine, and now all of a sudden you're firing it back up in March, and it won't fire back up because the carburetor's all gummed up. Yeah, what it does is apparently certain sections in the fuel system will dry out, and it leaves a residue there, and that gets all gummy, and it's a problem. So use straight gas on those and on your cars that are going to be sitting for a while. They obviously didn't do that with this little Vespa, so we're going to have to go to some extremes. The engine has to be rebuilt. It's a two-cycle engine, and the seal that basically seals the crankcase where the bottom, what we call the bottom end of the motor, is sucking air. And when it does that, that's not good. And so they're going to rebuild my motor. And the guy was really nice. I mean, he sounded like a young guy. I was kind of surprised. But maybe I sound like a young guy too. But he said, Lenny, can I call you Lenny? I said, absolutely. It's either that or the car guru. He said, I'll just call you Lenny. So while we're in there, We need to put on an electric ignition system. Of course, I know what that's all about because I put it on my Corvair. I put it on just about every old car. I want to get away from points and condensers. And a distributor has a bunch of different complicated parts in it. If you go with an electronic ignition system, it eliminates all that, and it's just much more reliable. So I've done it to just about everything that I got has an electronic ignition system in it, except if you're trying to win a car show. If you're trying to win a car show, you got to go with the original stuff. And so, you know, there is an advantage. If you want to win a car show like it's a judged event, like the Antique Automobile Club of America, they don't go for any type of modification. They want total originality. But see, with this Vespa, I just want it to run. And my Corvair, for example, when I fire it up, I want it to start. I want to be able to drive it. I don't want to have any problems with it. And I don't want to have to do a tune-up every 12,000 miles. And if you put an electronic ignition in it, you won't have to. So I asked the guy, how long is it going to take for you to do this? And he said, well, if I had the parts, I could have it done by middle of next week. I said, where do the parts come from? He said, Italy. Oh, boy. So anyway, he's going to order the parts. He said probably 2 weeks to get the parts and then another few days to put it all together. So how much does it cost, do you think, to rebuild a motor on a 1954 Vespa? Well, to rebuild a motor on a Ford Escape, we talked about that yesterday, $7,000. Well, no, that was to replace the long or short block on the motor. So, but you know, to rebuild a motor, it's equivalent to that. $500 to rebuild the motor on my Vespa. So I thought that was a great deal. And then the electronic ignition is going to cost me $300. So he said, Lenny, all in, you'll be under $1,000. And I said, I'm good. Do it to it. Now, did I get anything in writing? No, I didn't. I recorded the conversation. No, I didn't record the conversation. You know, sometimes you have to protect yourself, though. Can you record a conversation that you have with somebody just to protect yourself? Is that admissible in court? Well, in some states it's not. It is in the state of Tennessee. As long as one person that's involved knows that there's a recording being done, then that's legal. Just ask your lawyer. I've had to do that a few times when I had a really serious employee situation or a dispute, you know, with somebody over a contract or something like that. I've recorded the conversations and I don't feel bad about it one bit because it has saved me a couple times. So you just have to think about that. But you need to get things in writing. So if you took let's say you took your car to Atlanta, you don't know these people. You know, you drop your car off or you drop, you know, whatever you're taking down to get serviced, your Vespa. So what kind of things do you need to do to protect yourself? Well, one of my concerns is I know how valuable this thing is. And I bought it. It's a matching numbers Vespa. So I probably shouldn't say it that way. It's a Vespa. It's a Piaggio Vespa. Okay. So it's a matching numbers vehicle. So that the VIN number that's stamped on the block of the motor matches the number on the chassis. That's important. You know, if you're getting an old car, let's say you got a Chevrolet and it's a Corvette and you're taking it to get it serviced, you're going to believe it. Somebody's going to rebuild the motor. Then those have the VIN number stamped on, or part of the VIN number stamped on the motor block itself. And and that matches most of the digits in the VIN number on the chassis. That can make a huge difference in value. And I guess it could on my Vespa as well. So I was talking to the guy and I said, okay, I've got the numbers. I bought that at the Gooding auction. I've got the number off the engine and I've got the number off the chassis. Can you tell whether those numbers, you know, whether that's a matching number? How do you do that? See, I was planting a seed in his mind. I wanted him to know that I've got the engine number, and if he were to put some replacement block in there, that I would know it. See, that's some of the things that I've learned over the years. You must protect yourself. I went to look at a 1967 Chevrolet Corvette. It was in Dandridge, Tennessee, and I was thinking about buying it. It was a coupe. It's several years ago, and man, that thing looked good. The guy had a pretty good collection of other things, but he had one Corvette, and a '67 was the last of the C2 Corvettes. Now they're in C8 or Generation 8. I've got one of those in my showroom right now. So the C2 is very popular right now. The prices of those things are going crazy. Now, 4 or 5 years ago when I was looking at this vehicle, they weren't as hot as they are now. Probably should have bought it, but I didn't. Let me tell you why. The stamp on the engine was correct in terms of the numbers. It matched the VIN. But I took a picture of it because the stamp just didn't look right to me. It looked like somebody had been grinding, you know, did some type of metalwork on it, shaved it off, and then restamped it. That's what it looked like to me, because I've seen that happen before. So I took a picture of it, and I sent it to a Corvette expert. I had to do a little research, but I found this guy, and he said he was really nice, and we talked for a while, and he said, "Lenny, send me a picture of the VIN stamp on the block," and I did. He got back to me. He says, "That's a fake stamp." Now, folks, that makes a huge difference in value. Why would somebody do that? Well, they do it because it makes a huge difference in value if it matches. So it was a replacement block. Now, was it a 427? Yeah. You know, did it come with a 427? Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't the original 427. And if it has the original engine, it could add 20 to 25% to the value. And he was asking big money for that vehicle. As soon as I found out it had a replacement stamp, I started thinking, well, what else is wrong with this vehicle? I mean, has it been totaled? Has it been wrecked? You know, is it have any body damage? You know, there's other things that you look for on Corvettes. Every car is has specific things that you look for. Like on a Porsche, for example. Porsche 911 is going to have, well, if let's say it's a 60s, like a 912 or mid-60s 911. It's going to have a stamp just under the instrument panel, just above the radio. You have to pull a panel off to be able to see it, but it's stamped there, and it's also stamped back in the back on around the engine support in the engine area. If those numbers match, that's good. But then you have to see if it matches the VIN plate under the hood. If it doesn't match that, that's bad. And that can dramatically affect the value of something. I've got a guy that bought a vehicle out of California. It's a, well, it's weird. It's a 1967 front end and a 1977 rear end on a car. So this car was put together in two pieces, and it was put together at the rocker panel, which is like where the door is, okay? And so if they had just replaced the front, see, let me back up. The reason people do that is because they like the design of the front ends on the cars from the 60s better than they do the cars from the 70s. So normally you just replace the front, you know, 2 feet or so. You don't actually go back beyond the firewall and into the rocker panel and cut the car. So now this car is like two cars. They used to call that a clip, where you take two cars and make it into one car. And that's what they did on this. And so he spent all this money, and he's got this big fancy engine and stuff, and he was wanting to turn this into a race car. And then he runs out of money, and now he wants me to sell this thing for him. And, you know, that's hard. It's hard to sell a car that has two complete different VIN numbers. He said, "Why don't you just grind the VIN numbers off the back?" I said, "No, thank you. I don't do that." But that is what happens. They'll play games with you. So, you know, if you happen to be in the market for a vintage car, you just got to make sure the numbers match. That happened on my 1948 Lincoln. I've got the title right here in my hands. State of Tennessee sent it to me. It had the wrong VIN number. It had the VIN number that they had listed on the title was actually the title number, the Ohio title number on the original title from there. It wasn't the VIN number. Some secretary or somebody had transposed the numbers, and I knew that wasn't right. So I went to the courthouse, state of Tennessee, Greene County, and I said, "I've got a little problem. I had all my evidence," and they said, "Okay, well, you've got everything you need. We'll send you a new title." And I just got it. It was sitting here on my desk this morning. I'm so happy. Okay, I'm going to take a break. I'll be back here in just a minute. You know, when you're doing business with people that you don't know, and you don't have any experience with them, it's best to kind of check on them a little bit. Like, for example, if I took my vehicle to have the oil changed someplace and I'd never been there before, when I get in home, I'm going to pull the dipstick out after it, you know, settles, it cools. I'm going to be on level ground. I'm going to pull the dipstick out and I'm going to make sure it's at the full mark, because you just don't know. I'm going to look at the filter and make sure that they put, if I told them to put a factory filter on there, I'm going to make sure that they didn't put a Fram on there. You know, not that there's anything wrong with Fram, but if I told them to put an original OEM filter on there, I want an OEM filter on there. So I'll do a couple little checks. You know, if you wanted them to rotate your tires, you're going to be able to look at them, tell where they rotated. Well, you will if you mark them. So what you do is just mark the front tires, just put a little grease pencil mark on them, and just make sure that grease pencil mark is on the rear tires when you pick it up, so you know that they rotated your tires. If you pay for a brake job, you've never been there before, say I'd like to have my old pads. You know, those are the brake pads that they put on the disc brakes, or if it has drum brakes, you know. I want the pads and the shoes off the drum brakes. Oh, okay. We'll put them in a bag for you. Now, you don't know 100% that they're yours. You still might need to just look inside your wheel, make sure you got nice thick thickness on your brake pads and on, well, you can't really see your drums. So, I don't, you know, do I sound like I'm being overly cautious? I think you have to be sometimes. Now, you don't if you do business with these people. You know them, you trust them, and you've had a lot of good experiences with them. You know they're taking care of you. They wouldn't want to disappoint you for anything. So I was telling a lady today, you know, I appreciate her business. I'm glad that she trusts me. And she said, Lenny, I just really wouldn't go anyplace else. I mean, we've been friends, and I mean, you do work for us, and I trust you. So if you can develop that kind of relationship, it just makes you feel better. You know, you want that with your plumber, your electrician, your bug man, you know, when they come spray your house and stuff. Doing business with people that you know and trust is the way to go. If I can help you with anything, call me 423-552-2020 or send me an email to LennyLawson2020@gmail.com, and I will see you next time.